good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton Cuff, hit me, cut it,
because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Hey, bonjour, Anine, everybody. This is Ogama Ganuakwe standing in for Robert Pilot tonight. He has some work with the Ho-Chunk Nation that he is a member of and legislates for, so he's not with us tonight on the air. However, he is with us in spirit, as later today we're going to hear from him and Robert Lilligren. They had a great interview earlier today, and I've got a recording of that for everybody to tune into tonight. And I just wanted to let everybody know that this portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. And you know that today is Give to the Max Day. So Give to the Max is a annual event put on by Give to the Max MN, and givemn.org. Has awesome incentives for people to donate to your favorite organizations. The Friends of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, Lower Failing Creek Lower Failing Creek Project, and many more, including local and community organizing events for Native and environmental issues alike. So if you have not yet, make sure you head over to givemn.org and see if there's any places, Frogtown Radio, all of those awesome places that you like and would be so appreciative and maybe have a match for the next 12 hours or so to raise some money. I know the Lower Failing Creek Project, who Native Roots Radio has worked with, Maggie Lorenz and their group over there, have raised about half of their goal as of just after noon today, and they need some big support in the last 12 hours here. So if you can spare anything in this season of giving, make sure you head on over to givemn.org and get some information to give to your favorite organizations. As always, I bring everybody some news that you don't hear everywhere else anywhere. And I've got some news for you here on Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. So I wanted to touch base on something we talked about a little bit earlier last week, but, you know, we didn't get to go quite that deep into it as we had hoped, but I want to bring it up again because this just became live as of yesterday. The Wadukawad Amikwag, those who protect the beaver or those who help the beaver, Citizen Science and Monitoring Group, shared public findings yesterday on the ecological harms from the Line 3 pipeline construction, or also known as Line 93 here in Minnesota. Volunteer scientists, field monitors, and indigenous leaders from Wadukawad Amikwag presented on a year's worth of findings about Line 3's impact on water and wetlands. And I tuned into that meeting yesterday at noon. I unfortunately wasn't able to make the Q&A immediately following Native Roots Radio yesterday, but everyone, I just want to let you know that it is heartbreaking, the permanent disturbance of surface and ground waters throughout Minnesota. There's ecological damage that's likely permanent at least 45 sites across the headwaters of the Red River of the North, the Mississippi River, the St. Louis River, and the Lake Superior watersheds. All of these places are going to be affected in a long-lasting way from these disturbances from the construction of the Line 3 pipeline. So far, the state of Minnesota has fined Enbridge and taken some legal action against the company for the harms to the water. And last month, the Attorney General of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, announced that the state was pressing criminal charges against Enbridge for their aquifer breaches. And the Minnesota DNR and the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa have reached agreements with the company for additional restoration and monitoring funds. However, those are really only related to three different aquifer breaches, and it sounds like the DNR has not made public if they have any findings or information for the ecological damage at the other 42 sites across the state. The DNR did find them due to the first identified identified aquifer breach site at Clearwater in Minnesota. But so far, the state's response has been very limited and based on very limited data provided to them from the company who did the harm. So if you haven't yet, make sure you head over to Wadukawat Amikwag's Facebook page. You can look for Those Who Helped the Beaver on YouTube, on social media, and, you know, take a look at the damage that's been done. They did a lot of drone footage. They had professionals and scientists come in, and it really is heartbreaking. So that's local news here in Minnesota, but regionally or nationally, I should say rather, the U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg got a bit of an earful about tribal roads. Indian Country Today reposts from Source New Mexico and says that the tribal leaders in New Mexico had a very simple message to the U.S. Transportation Secretary, and that was give us money to fix roads and patch up the broken agreement the federal government has failed to maintain. Ron Shatiba told the Pete Buttigieg during his stop in Albuquerque yesterday that federal responsibility, our great white father, is supposed to be taking care of all of our needs within Indian country because they took the land that we have away from us. Shatiba is the tribal liaison for the New Mexico Department of Transportation, and they chose not to mince any words when it comes to what's actually happening with the United States and their trust responsibility from the federal government based on treaties. He's from Acoma Pueblo and has seen for decades the problem-solving tribal nations have to do in order to fix and repair their roads using a funding formula that's really stretched between a lot of different governmental sources. Shatiba calls what he has to deal with and what the tribal nations have to deal with white tape because a lot of people call it red tape, but he calls it white tape because somebody else is making those regulations for Native people. And it really echoed what tribal representatives from the Apache bands, from the Pueblos, and from the Navajo Nation have expressed regarding funding for new road projects and really poorly maintained roads and other problems with federal grants that are excluding tribal nations from millions of dollars of investments under the Biden administration. So we'll have more information on these stories and this type of funding that is leading to the systemic problems within Indian country. But right now, the estimate, according to federal data, is that about 60% of tribal roads right now are unpaved. And that is a pretty high percentage that the federal government is not honoring for trust responsibility with Native people. Also in national news, the future of Crazy Horse Memorial could change. Whitney Recontour, who's Dakota, is the head of the new Crazy Horse Memorial Foundation, and he's taking over from the heirs of the sculptor of the rock carving of Tasunka Wiko, and that started before World War II. And the carving has grown to include the Indian Museum of North America, the National Native Education and Cultural Center, and the Indian University of North America. And that is something he talked about on Native America Calling earlier this week. So if you haven't gotten a chance, we've had the pleasure of having Antonia Gonzalez, who works on Native America Calling on Native Roots Radio in the past. She's been kind enough to join and to help us take over the show on nights where Robert and I, or just Robert or other people aren't available for the show because, you know, we all do have lives outside of Native Roots Radio, and definitely take some time to check that out as well. Again, I'm Ogamaganuakwe, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we have a quick message, and we'll be right back to listen to Robert Lilligren and Robert Pilot. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Robert Pilot here telling you about Minnesota Native American art. Did you know that Twin Cities is known for Native art? Well, if you're not familiar, then check out All My Relations Arts. It's a program that seeks to increase the visibility and value of these incredibly talented American Indian artists in all forms of art while honoring the history and the presence of indigenous cultures. And right now, All My Relations Arts is showcasing Rosie Seamus Dance, She Who Lives on the Road to War. This is an immersive installation dance performance created by Rosie Seamus in response to global loss and the collective need to come together in peace and reconciliation. She Who Lives on the Road to War is a place for visitors to rest, grieve, console, and meditate. Performances will take place through mid-December. Find the performance schedule at allmyrelationsarts.com. I love all the indigenous art here in the Twin Cities, and I hope you can enjoy it too. allmyrelationsarts.com.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
The Midtown Phillips Neighborhood Association invites you to join two community forums happening this week. On Monday, November 21st, hear about Midtown Phillips Community Partnerships and the call for 2023 outreach partners. Then on Tuesday, November 22nd, learn about harm reduction with the Indigenous Peoples Task Force. Both the Monday and Tuesday meetings will begin at 6:30 p.m. Visit MidtownPhillips.org for more information and a link to join the meetings by Zoom. That's MidtownPhillips.org.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, bonjour, everyone. This is Ogumagunuwakwe. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Native American Community Development Institute. Here's Robert Pilot and Robert Lilligren.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, and we always set time to talk to Robert, and I always have a great conversation with Robert about what's going on nationally and locally. Welcome, Robert.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. It's great to be here. Always it's great to be here.
The irony of our name is I don't know that many Roberts, but I have two Roberts that are on my show, Robert Blake and Robert Lilligren, and myself. So it's kind of funny. It's like all the Roberts I know are on
all the Roberts. Video. You draw them. They flock to you, Robert.
Yeah.
The Robert magnet.
I started a wallpaper business with another Robert in high school, and we called it Robert's Wallpaper Company. So don't ask me to do that
catchy.
Now, though.
Catchy yeah. name. Catchy name.
So we talk about national and local stuff, and that's a touch base nationally here. We have now heard the Republicans are taking over the House by a very small margin.
Not by much, right, yep.
And what does that mean to us? I know Mitch McConnell had, 17 votes against him. And so do we have some outlanders of anti-Trumpers that are voted in? And are we going to be able to do some stuff now?
Well, we'll have to see, right? And a lot of that's going to be up to those caucus leaders. It's Mitch McConnell as the minority leader in the Senate, you know, continuing. McCarthy in the House, he's going to have a very, very slim majority. That's hard to govern an unruly caucus when you have people so extremely right, you know, the Freedom Caucus and the MAGA folks, and then more centrist type of Republicans. And that's going to be a chore. And none of his predecessors have done all that great of a job of it. You know, and if the Republicans had gotten some kind of huge mandate in Congress, you know, a 20, 30, you know, 40 seat lead, which is what some people were projecting, that would be a little different story. But I suspect that there is going to be a strong movement toward getting things done in this next 2-year term. And so some of those more centrist Republicans, my guess is, will be interested in working across the aisle. And I think that's what the American people want, right? That's what I think this vote shows. That people want a Congress that can govern.
Yeah, good call. I really feel, well, we got the Senate, which is good, and we have the president. It's just been a hard-fought battle, and it's been a good thing. And I got to just throw this out there again, Robert. Thank goodness for the women and the Gen Zs.
Yep, that's who saved our democracy. This, you know, I mean, we're going to have to continually save it, but it's 18 to 29-year-old voters and women especially that controlled the majority and controlled the outcome. So thank you. And you know, ever since 2008 and President Obama's first election, you know, to me, it's really been building what I think of as the new electorate, right? The people who are really going to be in charge of this country or should be in charge of this country, and certainly young people who are the future of this country. And so I think the more we can build out this new electorate, the better that progressives, Democrats, fair thinking people are going to do in elections. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, the Republicans can do whatever they want to try to permanently ensconce minority rule in this country. And at the end of the day, it's a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
There are some 50 million more Democrats in this country than Republicans. And so the majority will come through. We just have to work hard. You know, we have to keep at it. You know, looking to the runoff in Georgia, that's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
I think it would be great to show a growth in the Senate majority with Democrats. And so... Mm-hmm. So that outcome's going to matter. And so it's not going to be 50-50. I think a 51-49 would be a very comfortable and powerful thing in the Senate.
Well, and the good news is, he didn't get 50%, but he did beat our former Minnesota Viking, which I hate to bring up.
yeah, it was so close, you know, and there was a spoiler, a libertarian, and at times I think, and I respect people who want to run for office,
right.
But when you're in that kind of a situation, I think maybe there should be a deferral to the greater good, because I'm guessing even if you just split what the third party candidate got, Warnke would have gone over 50% and we wouldn't be facing this runoff.
Help me understand, are they going to be trying to put a lot more bills through in the next month or so because of their lame duck status?
I hope so. And, you know, we saw yesterday the early vote in the Senate on marriage equality, right?
Yes.
And that was super encouraging. I think 12, is it 10 or 12 Republicans crossed the aisle.
Yeah.
I think it was a 62-37 vote. So
right.
It's veto proof. It's, and I just think that's so encouraging. And I would say, let's do that. You know, there would be a few things I would like to see. One is passing reproductive access, mm-hmm. equality, you know, passing reproductive rights. There are a few things I would hope they would do in this lame duck session. And I think they should. We'll see. I just saw something came across my social media from Senator Amy Klobuchar, and she was mm-hmm. advocating to pass reproductive right legislation in the lame duck session. So,
wow.
So we'll see. You know, I would hope some of those key issues, the debt ceiling. So let's hope.
Well, you know, and I don't know if you know this or time goes so fast. I was in New York and then Washington. I was in Washington for the ICWA. I don't know if we talked about that last week. I don't know what day it is today, but I was there supporting ICWA, and that was very interesting. I don't know if you listened to it much, but the Supreme Court has lost a lot of cool points. I was brought up to really respect the Supreme Court, and they do not know Indian law, Robert.
They don't know Indian law. It's surprising. Those of my friends who do know Indian law, Native lawyers and stuff, have explained it to me, how ignorant they are, which is shocking. And I think reflects the general public, right? I think the general public doesn't really understand Indian law. I barely understand, you know. But the Supreme Court itself, you know, it does not represent the majority of Americans' interests or positions. I think it's, you know, barely legitimate, if legitimate at all. You know, after the Dobbs decision, the anti-abortion decision, and the response to that, I feel like the right thing to do would be at least two justices, ultra-conservatives, resign so yeah. that people can be put into those positions who actually reflect the American people. You know, this is another very long-laid strategy for Republicans mm-hmm. to ensconce minority rule, and that's a very powerful place to do it. But now we'll see if we can pass laws that then the Supreme Court is obligated to rule on, then it's a little bit of a different story.
Well, let's just talk a couple seconds about ICWA. And I know for me, what I heard directly from some people and read that the oil companies are really supporting for free lawyers to this ICWA case because of where we see Line 3 in Minnesota and Dakota Access Pipeline, now Line 5 in Wisconsin, that they want these foreign companies want to be able to dig pipelines and not be messed with. So the bottom line is they want to mess with our sovereignty.
Right. And that's really the point, right? And it's unfortunate that Native children have to be sort of in the middle of this battle. But it's really about attacking sovereign rights. And so this is one way to start chipping away at those so that not just oil companies, I mean, corporations, conservative governments, right. the government in the state of Oklahoma, they want to abolish our sovereignty. And so they're yep. going to continue any attacks. And their payoff in the long run is going to be so great that they can invest in yeah. in lawsuits like this, you know. So I would expect more of this mm-hmm. in the near future, and hopefully, just, you know, because Native folks are really getting it together. We're steering our own narrative, controlling these kinds of conversations that will have positive outcomes in the long run for Native people and protecting our sovereignty. But it's going to be a fight.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, again, I started out by saying I don't really have as much respect for the Supreme Court as I did as a young person or even an older person. I lost my train of thought, but I think, you know, we really, really need to fight back. And oh, my train of thought was this, Robert, was there was 130 senators and a representative wrote a letter to the Supreme Court in support of ICWA. So, again, what's going on here?
Right. And there's an opportunity, right, to educate these elected officials, again, who aren't Indian law experts. And so even the concept of sovereignty is kind of foreign to Native people or non-Native people and Native people. And so I think here's an opportunity to raise awareness, to educate policymakers, decision makers, and the general public about what sovereignty is and what it means to us. And then really the underpinnings, like why it even exists, you know, and whose land this was anyway. And,
right.
and you know, and so this is what, you know, this was the bargain, right? You took all the land, we get this little bit of sovereignty.
Exactly. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're with Robert Lilligren of NADCI here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
As we head towards colder weather, it's important to make sure you're up to date on vaccinations and protected from COVID-19. The Native American Community Clinic is now administering the updated Pfizer bivalent booster. The updated bivalent booster helps protect against the original COVID-19 strain and against newer Omicron variants. And it will help restore protection that has decreased since previous vaccinations. People age 5 and older are now recommended to get an updated bivalent booster dose at least 2 months after their last COVID-19 shot. That means the bivalent booster may be given after a person's primary series or after their last booster shot, regardless of what brand you received before. Even if you've already had COVID-19, you should get vaccinated. Right now, at the Native American Community Clinic, you can get COVID-19 vaccines, including updated boosters, at the same visit as other vaccines. However, if you've received a recent monkeypox vaccine, you may need to wait 4 weeks before you can get a COVID-19 vaccine, and you should discuss this with your provider. Schedule your vaccination appointment with the Native American Community Clinic by calling 612-872-8086.
Health insurance that fits my budget? I'm covered. I needed health coverage I could count on and afford. MinSure helped me find a plan that works for me, and they helped me save money. Did you know that most Minnesotans qualify for savings through MinSure? And they have free experts who can help you sign up for coverage. Go to MinSure.org today and get started and get covered. That's MNSure.org. MNSure.org.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hi, Minnesota. This is David Pakman, and you can catch my show weekdays at 2 p.m. for the latest in political news on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Claire Ferreira, president and owner of Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. My grandfather started Standard over 90 years ago, and we've been a family-owned company ever since, serving over 500,000 of our fellow Minnesotans. I'm proud to be the fourth generation of my family working in our business. And when we say we treat our employees and clients like family, we truly mean it. See how we can help your family stay comfortable all year long at standardheating.com. That's standardheating.com.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Cloudy tonight with a low of 13, then cloudy on Friday with a high of 16.
Black Friday starts early at Warner Selling Appliance with deals you can't find anywhere else, like free dishwasher installation on brands like KitchenAid, an exclusive 5% savings plus a Black Friday bonus of up to $800 on packages from select brands. Shop now at WarnerCellion.com.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm here with Robert Lilligren. We're just talking over some national politics, and I think I want to switch it in here to some local stuff. And, you know, Wendy always tells me, ask them what they want to talk about, you know. So I'm going to try and hand this over to you, Robert, in a sense of letting our audience know what's happened here in the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota. We have some good news.
We have great news here. So we have what we call the trifecta, right? So we held a Democratic governor's office, we held a Democratic House of Representatives in our state, and for the first time since, I think it's 2014, we flipped the Senate back to Democrat. And so we have all three in Democratic control, and just the possibilities that that brings. And we have a kind of a nice bumper of a state surplus in our state budget. I think it's somewhere right around $9 billion now, something wow. like that. Yeah, $6 to $9 billion. And of course, we're heading into recession, and that's going to mean, you know, that some of that will get used. But we have all kinds of possibilities. You know, there are things to things we wanted to get done for a while. I think, folks may not know, I'm in regional government here. I'm an appointed Metropolitan Council member. I was appointed by our governor. And so we do regional governance and there's some reform and, transportation funding and things, transit funding that we want to address. So let's see what happens. And then, of course, with our native lieutenant governor, Peggy Flanagan, my whiter sister, it's just we have space at the table.
Yeah, definitely. And it's exciting. And we have a new Two-Spirit Native American that won up in Duluth.
So cool.
Yeah, so we're accumulating stuff. And then I also got to just bring up, too, that we're really sad that Ruth Buffalo didn't get reelected in North Dakota. I know I've brought that up a couple of times, but
yeah,
it's a hard road to toe. But I'm going to wait a few days to reach out to her and just say, hey, I'm sure she'll land on her feet.
Yeah, I'll reach out to her. I mean, she's so dedicated to community and stuff. And like you said, it's a tough road to hold. I was always a little surprised she got elected. She must have worked her, behind off. And that scares people, right? And so it activates the opposition. And then
the gerrymandering, Robert, the gerrymandering killed her big time because her support was taken out of her district.
Yep. And in here in Minnesota, with the surplus and with the organizing we've been doing, especially in the urban Indian communities around getting direct allocations to Native orgs from the state and off reservation in the urban centers. We had our Urban Indian Legacy Initiative that made real progress last session, of course, with a split legislature, and then our legislature was unable to complete their work. So we weren't able to realize that progress last session. I'm sure we'll see it this session, that's a big ticket list of prioritized projects, capital projects, and Native organizations in the urban centers. And so we came together, we prioritized this list, we are working on the top three, we'll get those funded, then move down the list. And it's just an incredibly high level of collaboration, cooperation, mutual support amongst the urban Indian organizations.
Yeah, that's not fairly new, isn't it, that our organizations are really working together, and it's really good to see.
Yep, this is the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative is a new effort. It's being led by Dr. Joe Hobart at the American Indian OIC here, Louise Manson at Division of Indian Works, and others. And what's leading up to it has been years, decades, really, in the making. And I think I've shared this with you before, but about maybe 6 years ago or so, 7 years ago, we started to have these ideas that, we were always going to funders, whether it's philanthropy or public sector, and we were all kind of competing with each other, trying to bring resources into the community. And we made the strategic decision to stop competing, try to be indigenized the way we operate, and try to work together to bring more support to the community. And we've been pretty successful. And I'll never forget this one meeting, Robert, where there was maybe six or seven organization leads, our development people. We've been talking for weeks about how to work collaboratively along these two big public sector funding opportunities to generate jobs within the Native community. And so we decided we were going to try to collaborate and not compete. And there was this one meeting where we were all sitting around a table, and it was time to fish or cut bait, right, to make some decisions. And we sat there, the six or seven of us, and we're all looking at each other silently, waiting for someone to take a move. And it was like if there was a clock in the room, you would have heard that ticking, it reminded me of watching a high-stakes poker game in a movie or something. And finally, one of the agency heads said, well, I'll do this. And then more pauses around. Someone said, well, I will do this. And then someone, the head of Indigenous Peoples Task Force said, well, I will sit out this round and support you. And I want to make sure that I'm considered for the next round of funding. And then we just kind of divvied it up. Wow. Not only were we successful, we wanted to have applications to City of Minneapolis, to the state of Minnesota, that were so rock solid that if they denied us, we could beat them up with it, Mm-hmm. But we prevailed. We brought these funds in. And for me, that moment, that meeting, that high stakes poker game meeting, will always be evidence of us building trust amongst each other. Essentially what we were saying to each other is, I trust you. You know, I trust you to do this. And that is huge. That's the foundation, I think, for the success that we're seeing now in our collaborations.
Yeah, and that's a great story, too, because we can, I can't kind of attitude that's permeated now through the Native community, which is brand new for me, and it's great. It's great to hear.
It's very cool. And then we have a great event tonight. I know you'll be there. I'll be there. The Native Rise, and it's many of these same organizations that have been part of this work in the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative under the leadership of Dr. Joe Hobart at the American Indian OIC, where we come together. We have decision makers, policy makers, resource holders that are guests. It's sort of a gala. It's an event. And tonight we'll be recognizing leadership through the generations, the legacy of leadership here, and really lifting up some of the next generation of leaders. And it should be a great time.
Yeah, and I've seen the list, and it's exciting that we have. I know it's hard for us to believe, but we are elders now, Robert, and it's looking good. The people behind us. There was a break for a while there, a few years, but boy, it looks really good.
It looks great. It looks great. And it's not that hard for me to believe I'm an elder, especially when I get out of bed. I get out of bed in the morning. Yeah. The aches and pains that come.
Why does my shoulder hurt? I used to go to sleep and feel rejuvenated. Now I wake up and go, why does my shoulder hurt? You know, what happened? But yeah. But it's good to see the future. And I know as a high school teacher, former teacher, there's a lot of young ones that are coming behind that are getting educated and showing up. And as we know, for me at least, 90% of it has been showing up. I think people think I've been around the community forever. And, you know, I've only been around 7-8 years.
Yeah, you've been around a long time. But, you know, back in my earliest days of grassroots community organizing and stuff, and there used to be this saying, you know, the world is run by those who show up.
Yeah,
that's a little glib, but it is kind of true, you know, and so the flip of that is true, right? The status quo depends on us not showing up, because then they can run things. And so all of a sudden, just showing up is a disruption, right? It's a direct action. I'm in the room now. And then for more and more people, I have a place at the table, whether you're an elected official, a board member, you know, we pushed and fought for spaces at the table, and now we should use them.
Right.
To do systemic change.
Wow, really good point.
Thanks. That's very much what NACTI does, our organization. You know, we're authentically grounded in community, and we operate in the systems change realms, you know.
Right. And kudos to NACTI for sure. I also think, I was thinking too, when we talked earlier and you talked about 50 million the Democrats outnumber the Republicans 50 million. And I always say we outnumber them, and I didn't realize it was that much. But I don't remember when I was young, Robert, the push to have people, young people vote. It was almost like, well, you guys don't know what you're talking about, or you haven't lived, so don't bother voting. And now there is a big push for our young ones to vote because of, you know, if you vote when you're 18 or 19, your first election, there's more likely you'll vote the rest of your life.
Truly. And we do a lot of that work at NACTI as well through our voting and tradition, that generational, intergenerational approach, and engaging people before they're eligible. But, you know, as a candidate myself, the conventional wisdom was always old people vote, young people don't vote, focus on the voters.
Right.
And we saw in this last election cycle, you know, the Republican Party doing just that, and how what a mistake that was. And right now, young people are the largest, potentially the largest voting bloc in the country. And so neglect those voters to your peril, right? Wow. And 18 to 29 year old voters voted two times more, you know, two thirds more Democrat than Republican. And so very fertile territory. I think the books on campaign strategies are being rewritten as we speak. And this is their country, right?
Right.
You know, the future belongs to the young. And so let's make sure they're prepared to vote. As far as I can tell, they were very thoughtful voters.
Yes.
They did their research. They understood what they were doing, you know, and that defies conventional campaign strategy and wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, everything changes. And I just want to to, you know, bring up the fact, or I shouldn't say the fact, I just bring up, like, you know, in 2008, Obama was against gay marriage, and how things change quickly. And I know students that I dealt with, these issues that are so big to the MAGA right are like natural for our kids.
Right. Well, and I would say, you know, Obama as a state legislator was pretty pro-marriage equality. And then when he became a federal officer, right, a president, he was, I think, trying to find where that balance was and trying to reflect the American people. And now it's clear American people overwhelmingly support native or marriage equality. And so we're heading in that direction.
And it's a great way to end. Thank you so much, Robert, for being on. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Health insurance that fits my budget? I'm covered. I needed health coverage I could count on and afford. MNsure helped me find a plan that works for me, and they helped me save money. Did you know that most Minnesotans qualify for savings through MNsure? And they have free experts who can help you sign up for coverage. Go to MNsure.org today and get started and get covered. That's MNsure.org. MNsure.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
All right, Wendy, it's a sacred animal time here. Yeah. We've had another nice show. Thank you, Nancy Bolio, North Dakota Representative Ruth Buffalo, and of course our own State Senator Mary Kunish. Now the floor is all yours, Wendy. Welcome.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And I know they had a lot of serious information today on the show that we share. But on Fridays, I'd like to kind of keep it light on my animal section, because during the week, we do talk a lot of about, you know, many serious, devastating things that are hard to hear about animals. So on Fridays, I kind of like to keep it fun. So we'll be keeping it fun today. My name is Hana Jihihani, and that means cares for them. And as everybody knows, I was given that name by my Dega, Curtis. So as always, Curtis, thank you. I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. So in the past few Fridays, what I've been doing is talking about 30 clawsome fun facts about cougars, and we haven't gone through all 30 yet. So I think we left off at number 21 the last time. So I want to get through them. They're really pretty fun. This article and these facts were written by Michelle Gabriel. And this is from a site called the Number Fact Site, and it's Science and Nature and Animals. So they give a lot of information. So I find cougars, which are also panthers and pumas, they're all the same animal and they're called different things depending on where they live in the world. So one of the things I want to say this again, and I know I've repeated this, but I think it's pretty funny. But despite their impressive size, cougars do not roar, but instead they purr. They are the biggest cat that can purr and meow. I would really love to hear one. I should like Google the sound of a cougar because I'd really love to hear them meow. I'm sure it's a pretty deep meow, not like our cat Lucy, you know.
Meow.
There you go, something like that, right?
Yeah.
I would say. The last time we left off, we were on number 21. And it was a word that I did not know the meaning to. So this is it. This is it. Let's see if you know what this means, Robert. Cougars are typically active around dawn and dusk, making them crepuscular mammals. And I didn't know what the word crepuscular was. And I said I'd have to go ahead and look that up and come back to you. So I did.
It's nighttime?
Yeah, it's twilight. Yeah, animals that are active during twilight. Yeah, yeah.
In the movie business, we call that magic time.
Exactly. Crepuscular. I don't have a very good vocabulary, so learning about animals also improves and sharpens my vocabulary, which is good. Right? One good thing. Number 22, cougars' sizes vary depending on their location. Cougars that live closer to the equator are generally smaller, with their size increasing the further away they are. So I guess as northern they get, the bigger the cats get, which is an awesome fact.
Mm-hmm.
Despite their impressive size, pumas cannot roar again, but instead purr. They are the biggest cat that can purr and meow. This is probably due to the fact that they are more closely related to the domestic cat rather than other large cats like lions and tigers. Huh. So I didn't know that either. That's unbelievable.
Just to respond to the size of the cougars, I know Johnny Cougar Mellencamp's really short, and I think he is from the South. So there you go, right?
I think that's funny, right? I have a dog barking here in the background. I don't know if you could hear it, but to cougars' prey being mostly – listen to this, though. Due to cougars' prey being mostly herbivorous, the seeds in the stomach of their victims will be spread through the cougar's scat, which is their poop. This results in cougars unintentionally planting over 90,000 plants a year. That's a pretty good one, right?
Yeah.
Pumas are extremely territorial, often dominating home ranges up to 150 square miles. Wow. That's pretty wild. Could you tell me how big 150 square miles is? Do you have any idea of how big that is, like comparatively to something else? Because I don't really have a clue. Well, that would be something I would have to Google, too.
We'd have to go to Eau Claire and then up north 150 miles and then left 150 miles.
Wow, that's really far. Then.
Down to another 150 miles back to the cities.
Wow, so they're dominating home ranges of up to 150 square miles. That's amazing. More often than not, mountain lions won't attack humans unless they feel threatened. So, yeah, I think it is pretty rare that we hear about mountain lions, attacking humans. When it comes to hunting, cougars will stalk their prey, then pounce and attack their victim's throat or back of the neck. Ew, that wasn't a fun fact, but it's true.
Wow.
Could you guess, or do you have any idea how, what's the average inches of their tail, a cougar's tail?
Which 18, which helps? 18 inches.
18 inches. 33 inches.
What the?
Yep. Cougar's tail average around 33 inches, which helps them balance. So comparatively, our cat Lucy, she has a pretty long tail for a little cat, right?
Look at Kathleen said to jump from trees, too.
Yes.
Does a cougar jump in trees?
Yeah, they jump in trees. They do. They climb trees and sit on branches, and then they can pounce on prey. Yeah. It is difficult to get an accurate account of how many cougars are in the wild because they remain so well hidden. By approximation, there are about 50,000 cougars in the wild. Now, I don't know if that's the world or the United States. That's something else I'm going to have to look up and get back to you on. While certain populations of mountain lions have dropped, there are still a large amount of cougars out there, so much so that their species is still at least concern. So I guess they're not really worried about them going extinct. But I guess they really don't know how many there are. So I know that sometimes they are hunted. I also have 13 jolly facts about German shepherds. How much time do we have?
30 seconds.
Let's see what we have here. Let's see the first one. German shepherds were originally bred for a very specific reason. Let's see what it is. And if not, it'll be a cliffhanger.
Yeah, exactly.
Cliffhanger for next Friday. How about we leave it as a cliffhanger for next Friday, and I'll make sure I get back to the specific things about German shepherds. I don't really like to talk about any specific dog breeds. I like people if they just go to their local shelter and get the dog in need, because I always say the best breed is the dog in need. I even have a t-shirt that says that, and I'm very proud to wear it. So
I was going to say that'd be a great, great t-shirt.
It already is.
Hey, Peeny Geegee Wendy, for all you do for our sacred animals all across Turtle Island, really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Right on, right on. I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, or run for office. I've been your host, Robert Pilot. Again, Peeny Geegee to all our guests. And I would just want to say, we're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier. Stop Line 3. Please get vaccinated and boosted.